Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds' Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds' Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts. Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is sponsored by Mai Theater in New York City and their upcoming production of Once Upon a Korean Time. Founded in 1989, Mai Theater Company is a professional award-winning nonprofit 501c3 organization whose primary mission is to develop and produce new and innovative plays by Asian American writers. They're a great theater company out in New York who has distinguished themselves as one of the country's leading incubators of new works shaping local and national conversations about what it means to be Asian American today. Their latest production, Once Upon a Korean Time, is a generation-spanning new journey through the historical and fantastical, mixing traditional Korean fables with the horrors of the Korean War. Daniel K. Isaac's epic new play is a funny and deeply moving analog for the experiences of the Korean American diaspora. Isaac deftly moves his characters through time, tracing the legacies of trauma that are passed down from one generation to the next, and the various coping mechanisms each one uses to soldier on. The show features sea kings, bubbles, tigers, generational traumas, and of course, barbecue, and is the professional playwriting debut for Daniel K. Isaac, who previously acted on Billions, The Chinese Lady, and of course made an appearance on a previous iterations of Haikus for Hotties. Previews begin August 23rd at La Mama's Ellen Stewart Theater in New York City and will be there for a limited engagement until September 18th. So if you are in the New York area or plan to make a trip to New York in the coming weeks, definitely check it out. Tickets are now available at maitheater.org. There will be a link in the show notes, but if you're curious, the website is maitheatre.org. That's right, it's theater with an R-E, so you know it's fancy. And if you do attend the show, please let us know. Rira and I are stuck here on the West Coast, so we won't be able to make it, but we do want to hear your thoughts on the play as well. All right, now on with the show.
You're listening to...
Whoa!
Potluck.
And hey, you're listening to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here to discuss our August 2022 book club pick, Honey and Ishu's Guide to Fake Dating by Adiba Jagradar. A story about, you guessed it, fake dating taking place in Ireland, about two Bangladeshi girls who engage in a fake dating scheme in order to pursue their own personal agendas. That's a very basic synopsis of the plot. We'll go way more in detail as we discuss the book. But before we get started, though, standard spoiler warning, in our book club discussions, we do talk about all things about the book, characters, beats, themes, and also spoilers. So if you have not read Honey Ishu's Guide to Fake Dating yet, and you do care about being spoiled, push pause, go read the book, come back and listen to our discussion. If you don't care about being spoiled, go ahead and listen on as well. I will say nothing in the book is particularly surprising in terms of like character beats. You know, we've all read fake dating stories before, and it kind of follows the same beats, but it does have a lot of really unique perspectives and themes and relationships too. So excited to get into all of that. So to start us off, Rira, can you give us the book jacket description?
All right. Everyone likes Humara Hani Khan. She's easygoing and one of the most popular girls at school. But when she comes out to her friends as bisexual, they invalidate her identity, saying she can't be bi if she's only dated guys. Panicked, Honey blurts that she's in a relationship. with a girl her friends absolutely hate, Ishita Ishu Day. Ishu is the complete opposite of Hani. She's an academic overachiever who hopes that becoming head girl will set her on the right track for college. But Ishita agrees to help Hani if Hani will help her become more popular so that she stands a chance of being elected head girl. Despite their mutual beneficial plan, they start developing real feelings for each other. But relationships are complicated, and some people will do anything to stop two Bengali girls from achieving happily ever after.
Yeah. You know, I kept forgetting that this took place not in the U.S. until, and I know we kept reminding ourselves every week on this podcast, but then I read, quote unquote, this book via audiobook, and...
Yeah, same here.
And they got two narrators to read the book, one for each point of view. And they both spoke in Irish accents. And I was like, oh, yeah, this takes place in Ireland.
Yeah, the narrators were Rena Dutt and Shupangi Karmakar. And yeah, it was like really nice to hear the Irish accent and also like the Bengali accents for the parents and some of the like Bengali and Indian characters. So I really enjoyed listening to it. I highly recommend folks to listen to it as well. Like I'm a pretty big fan of like Tana French novels, and those are like murder mysteries, completely different genre, but it also takes place in Ireland. And I like listening to the audiobooks for those because it's like more immersive when you hear the Irish accent.
That's true. I definitely got more from listening to it than I would have reading it straight up. I mean, I kind of did half and half. I read along. I kind of listened to it. I had a lot of long car rides during this week. So I definitely was able to listen to it then. And it just, yeah, this, it gets you in the mood, especially this book, because it takes place in Ireland. It definitely added a lot to the experience because I was able to, you know, listen to the characters speak in their natural voices or close to their natural voices.
Yeah. Okay, so this book has the title. So this book has fake dating in the title, but ironically enough, I don't think there was a lot of fake dating in it.
I mean, you know, I mean, I think, isn't that the case in a lot of fake dating stories? Is the fake part only lasts like a chapter or two at most until one of them starts to catch feelings, right?
Well, like what I mean by like fake dating is that they went on like one official date. And then I feel like there wasn't like enough events where they have to fake a relationship, but I was fine with that because I was just like, I feel like that is the hook for readers to actually like pick up the book. And like the real heart of the book is just like Hani and Ishu's like individual growth as like people and how they support each other and how how they learn to be more of themselves, I guess. If that makes sense.
I feel like, and maybe this is just my naivete about high school dating, because I feel like when you're dating in high school, it's not really a lot of going out dates. A lot of it is just like hanging out in school, holding hands, and like walking home together, and like they were at each other's places a lot, right? So I don't know. I think in that case, it's more in line. But then also, I was, you know, super not cool in high school. So how would I know what real dating was like?
I mean, they did go on a triple date to the movie theater with Hani's toxic friends, Ashling and Deirdre. And I'm like, wow, that does sound like a high school date where you just hang out with your friends and their boyfriends and go see movies because there's absolutely nothing else to do.
That's true.
But also they're like in Ireland, so they're of drinking age. But of course, like we find out that Hani is Muslim and she can't drink. So that was like a big plot device in the book as well. So
yeah, I did love that both characters, like even though they share a same like mother country had different upbringings and experiences. You know, Ishu's family is, I want to say Buddhist, right?
I don't know. I just know that they're not Muslim.
Oh, they mentioned something about Buddha in the book. So I thought they were, yeah, I don't know. I'm going to assume they're Buddhist. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, like Ishu is Indian Bengali, and you know, she's a first gen immigrant. She moved to Ireland when she was very young, and her family kind of didn't start off well off. They lived in like a one bedroom apartment, and now they have a shop of their own. Whereas Hani is Bangladeshi Bengali Muslim. And she was born and raised in Ireland. So definitely a different experience from Ishu. So it's really nice to see a range of experiences and diversity within like such a small subset of like a marginalized group, especially like when it's in Ireland as well. So I would guess that it's even smaller.
Yeah, as we've preached on this show many times before, Asian is not a monolith, and neither are any of our individual like ethnicities a monolith as well. Asia, South Asia, East Asia, Southeast Asia is a land of many peoples and many cultures and many religions from all
and
over
dialects.
The world. Yeah, and yeah, it was you know, the book is called Hani and Ishu's Guide to Fake Dating. But the story actually starts with Ishu's point of view and opens with a, I guess you can call it a trope that we've seen in many Asian American or Asian diaspora stories, which is the revelation that an older sibling is rebelling against the immigrant parents' dreams and desires for them.
Yeah. I really liked the relationship between Ishu and Nick. Their storyline was probably like one of my favorites in the book. But I am the oldest child in my family, and I'm definitely not the golden girl. So
yeah,
could not
I mean,
relate.
I was able to relate a little bit because, you know, I am pretty close in age with my younger brother. And when you're so close in age that like you get compared academically at the same time, you do kind of develop a rivalry. And, you know, especially when you live in a family with where, you know, academic success is like the foremost important thing, like getting into a good school, getting a good degree, getting a good job. Your relationship growing up is a little different. And, you know, it's not until you grow up where you realize you kind of want something more from your sibling relationship. And it was really sweet to see Nick wanting to trying to convince Ishu that they could be more than just what they were as growing up, and trying to reconnect with her while Ishu was still stuck in her like, no, I have to compete against you, I have to be the best because now since you effed up, I'm the last chance for our parents to achieve their dreams. And it was really frustrating as an adult reading it because, you know, Nick was totally trying to reach out to her the entire time, and Ishu just couldn't see it because she's so focused on her own goals.
Yeah, and the reason why Nick has, quote-unquote, fallen from grace with her parents is because she says that she's going to take a year off of university, of pre-med, so that she could get married. And the first reaction that her parents have is, are you pregnant? Like, is this why you're doing this? And to be honest, like, I had the same reaction, too. I was like, why are you skipping school just to get married? That doesn't make sense. But also, like, my reader brain was like, there has to be more than just the wedding.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a whole other book that can just be Nick's journey, right? The model daughter who goes to college and discovers freedom and herself, her own goals for the first time. I think, you know, we don't really get a lot of insight into what her journey was, only that it resulted in her deciding to essentially rebel against her parents' wishes.
Yeah, like, I mean, we say rebel as if, you know, like she kind of hates her parents, but that's like what we mean. I mean, like, to me, like, it was really heartbreaking because Nick was saying, like, we find out later in the book that, you know, the wedding is not the reason why she's just, you know, dropping out of school. Because later on, she says, I'm dropping out of school, period. But she says that she was so depressed and, you know, she was having issues with her mental health and her physical health, and she couldn't eat while she was at school and she was barely passing her classes. And, you know, like, unfortunately, I've heard so many stories like that from, like, the Asian American community, because there is just so much pressure that is put on you to achieve the future that your parents have mapped out. And then once you get to college and you don't have that pressure anymore, or like the pressure is just you, like you're unnecessarily putting the pressure on yourself and you're surrounded by other people who, you know, are just as good as you. I've seen people break down and it's really, really hard to watch.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, right? It's just you spend your life as the golden kid, the number one in your class, and then you go to a school where everyone was number one in their class. And all of a sudden you're just, you know, at best average. And yeah, a lot of people or some people can't handle that, especially those who kind of see their identity as being number one. Right. I had a college roommate who, even at school, his parents dictated every choice he made, what classes he took, what major he declared. Like, basically, his parents would call him during class registration and sit with him on speakerphone as he, like, registered for classes.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that is way too much. But I thought it was really funny how, like, Nick says, oh, my fiance, Rakesh, is... like, he just graduated from, like, engineering school. And usually parents would be all over that. But, you know, they're just like, you're giving up your education for a man? That is, like, that's what we went through, and that is not something that we want for you. And I don't know. Like, it just reminded me that a lot of Asian American immigrant parents, they have, like, a very specific timeline for their children. It's like, you study and don't go on dates until you go to college, but like you don't actually, like you, in college you look for a husband or whatever, but you don't actually get married until after everybody has their degrees and have like their first job.
But it has to be like exactly a year after that happens.
Yeah, it's like a year or two after it happens. And I was like, wow. Like, I mean, she is like, she reached the final goal for parents, which is to like get married and hopefully have children. And I'm like,
yeah,
why does it matter that it's in reverse order? But yeah,
it's
but I really like the fact that Ishi's parents were conservative, and we got a contrast between Ishi's parents and Honey's parents, because Honey has a very like tight relationship with her ama. And I don't know, it was just like something that I don't really see all that often. And, you know, like Honey is actually out to her parents. She was like she outed to her parents before she outed to her friends. And I was like, oh, that's like usually very rare.
Yeah. Just like how Bangladeshi Asians are not a monolith. Bangladeshi Asian parents are also not a monolith. There's a spectrum of all sorts of parents and their tolerances for their children's individuality, let's say.
Yeah, and like Hani's parents, they tell her like, oh yeah, like we had to shift a lot of our perspective after you came out to us, but you know, that's something that we processed on our own time because that's our baggage and not yours. And I was like, wow, that is some healthy parent-child relationship right there.
Yeah, I mean, the story is all about relationships. And I love that we have different sorts, like we have a whole plethora, a whole smorgasbord of relationships within ourselves. Like Hani, like Ishu and her parents, their relationship is kind of more your immigrant parent, strict immigrant parents and their overachieving daughter. Whereas Hani's is about like easygoing parents and the lies you tell them.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was so funny that Hani's mom was like, oh, you're hanging out with Ishu? She's kind of intense. And I really don't want you to adopt that, you know, pressure of being academically successful in order to have a great future. Mm. I was like, when have I heard of Asian parents saying it's okay if you're not at the top of your class?
It's because you have the other type of Asian parent. I feel like for every strict like tiger mom, there's like a couple cool moms kind of like talking behind her back like, man, I feel bad for her kids, right?
Well, it's also that like Hani has older brothers who, you know, are married and have children of their own. Mm. And Hani is the youngest. And I feel like Hani's mom has just, you know, like after raising two fully grown adults, like she has more perspective on what works and what doesn't work in parenting.
Yeah. What did you think about, since we're on the parents, the way that those relationships are resolved? Like Hani does resolve her conflict with her parents, like coming clean about lying and coming to an understanding. But Ishu never resolves her issues with her parents, right? That's kind of left open-ended.
Yeah, and I can see why a lot of readers could be frustrated by that, because you don't have that nice closure with like the pretty bow on top. But
I feel like that's realistic, you know, though. Because
it's very realistic.
Because I'm sure, like, even today, as like a 30 plus year old man, there are plenty of stuff I have not resolved with my parents yet.
Yeah, and like the decision of like her parents saying, we're not going to go to Nick's wedding, because if we go, it means that we're proving that she's right. And she's going to like live this life that we did not map out for her. And I was like, it's your daughter's wedding. Like, is it really so important for you to prove that you're right and to be stubborn? But that's just how it is in a lot of Asian households. Like, you can go on your whole life with your parents not ever apologizing to you. They will just do things out of stubbornness. And yeah. I was like, this is very, very realistic. I really like the fact that Ishu and Nick, they had, you know, they kind of like reached this new chapter in their sisterhood. And Ishu's like, I'm going to my sister's wedding. Like, she is my family. I am going. And that would not have happened towards like the beginning of the book with how Ishu's mindset was. And I really like that growth. And Hani's growth was really interesting to read as well. I actually got a lot of war flashbacks with her toxic friends, Aisling and Deirdre, which is really funny to me because I feel like I had that same problem like after college, like when I was like in my early 20s, and not so much when I was in high school, because when I was in high school, I was more like Ishu and very, very intense. I was very intense, intimidated a lot of people. And I was just like, please leave me alone. Like, don't be friends with me. Luckily, I had a lot of extroverted friends who latched onto me and kind of refused to not be my friends. So I was lucky in that regard, but I was definitely like Ishu in high school.
Yeah.
And a lot of her monologue, inner monologue, I was just like cracking up. Like her being like, oh, I don't know why like these white boys are considered so attractive to these white Irish girls. They all look the same. And I was like, definitely thought that when I was in high school. So
yeah, I think I definitely did relate more to Ishu's point of view than Hani's. But that's just because, again, the way that I grew up as well, I didn't grow up needing to
conform
myself. Like, yeah,
because like we find out that Hani, you know, because she was born and raised in her Irish town, you know, she kind of learned early on that she has to blend in order to have friends. Like her friends, Aisling and Deirdre, they call her Myra
because her full name is Moira,
because they never attempted to pronounce her real name.
Which is such a, I definitely relate to that part because I think we've talked about this many times on this podcast. My last name is impossible for Western tongues to pronounce. And so I've had to settle for a bastardized version of it almost my entire life.
I mean, the thing that drove me crazy was Humaira. Like, it's literally just adding the who to the front of Myra's. It's like, it's not even that hard. We've seen South Asian names that are like very long and very hard to phonetically pronounce. And Humaira is not one of them.
It's actually pretty really phonetic, to be honest.
It's pretty phonetic, which is why like I listened to the audiobook because I was like, there's probably going to be a lot of words that I don't know how to pronounce. So it's great to like just have the correct pronunciation. But Humaira, I was like, it sounds exactly the way it's written. Same thing with Ishita. So I was like, why are her friends so terrible and can't even attempt to do this one small thing? But I understood because my name is Rira and it's very hard for some people to pronounce, even though it's like literally
it's pretty
two
phonetic
syllables.
As well, I feel.
Like. It's pretty phonetic, but you'll be so surprised. Like literally, I've had teachers growing up saying, oh, can I just call you Ri for short? And I said, no, you're going to call me by my full name because I'm not going to respond to Ri. And it was like very... Like, same thing with, like, my in-laws. Like, when I went to the wedding this past week, there were relatives who couldn't say my name, like, correctly. Some of them just called me Ri, and some of them, like, put the emphasis on the wrong vowel, like, calling me Riera. And I was like, that's not my name. I think it's very easy to pronounce my name, but... You know, you kind of have to pick your battles. And I feel like Hani had to pick her battles when she was much younger because her Irish town, like, it used to not have a very big Bangladeshi South Asian community. So she kind of grew up in, like, isolation along with her parents. And they're kind of learning how to... you know, be okay with their Bangladeshi roots and be like, yeah, it's okay to be a part of this community and, you know, turn your back on like the racist white Irish people.
Yeah. I mean, even in their school, they will go to a Catholic all-girls school. Ishu and Hani are the only two brown girls in the entire class, right?
Like, are they the only people of color?
No.
Because that's what I got when I was like, reading.
I thought I caught some East Asian names in there.
Okay, maybe there were some East Asians in there. Got it.
But in terms of like Desi girls, I think they were the only two. And so, you know, they have the age-old fear of, well, they just want us to be friends because we're from the same place. But then they end up together. So, you know, sometimes hanging out with people that you relate to or have some connection to does work out.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to hate that too, though. Like when like a new kid would come in and they're East Asian and they're like, hey, why don't you show this person around? And it's like, why? I am like the most introverted person. There are definitely better people in this classroom who can do the tour.
Yeah.
But obviously you picked me because I'm East Asian. So I definitely related to that fear.
I mean, I think as people of color, we kind of, it becomes real easy to see exactly how white people think, I guess. and I guess, I think that was what made it really, not frustrating, but kind of sad to kind of read Hani's rationalization of her friend's horribleness. Because a lot of the conflict for her and her friends was her coming to terms with maybe Ashley and Deirdre are actually horrible people, and maybe I should not be friends with them.
Yeah, and the reason why she hangs on to them so tightly is because she knew Ashling since kindergarten and, you know, Deirdre since, like, elementary school. So her reason for being so loyal to them is I grew up with them. They were here for me when I went through, like, my first breakup. Their family has always been really nice to me. So, of course, they're not going to say these things that make me feel horrible, and they're not going to purposely put me in situations that make me feel very small. And while I was reading that, I was like, how does that happen? Like, people you know, people you grew up with and spilled secrets to, grow up to be people that end up conservative. And I'm like, how does that happen? You're in the same town. You guys go to the same school. You spend so much time together. So how does that happen?
I mean, Aisling shows all the telltale signs of, like, toxic, bigoted person, right? She says Hani's one of the good ones, right? Oh, you're a friend because you're not that kind of Muslim or not that kind of Bangladeshi. And I think it was really early on, maybe like the third or fourth chapter, where they kind of crystallized the fact that they were all kind of similar people, until I think Hani observed that ever since they like entered their like late teens and started kind of develop their own individuality, they started to notice that they weren't 100% the same. And that's what bothers Aisling the most, is that Hani isn't, she's realizing that Hani isn't the person that, I mean, it's, if there's any parallel, it's between Aisling and Ishu's parents, right? Aisling wants Hani to be a certain type of person, a certain type of friend to her. And the fact that she isn't following her desired path is like infuriating and like making Aisling act out.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was like nice to see Ishu just kind of pointed out every single time, like Aisling and Deirdre were being such manipulative bitches. And she says manipulative bitches in the book. And I love, side note, I love the fact that Ishu curses a lot. And Hani's like, you, it's like, you shouldn't curse. And Ishu's like, hey, like, I'm Irish. I'm allowed to curse as much as I want.
And yeah. I was like, what was the line? It was
so funny.
You curse a lot for a Bangladeshi girl. And then Ishu goes, well, I curse just enough for an Irish person.
Yeah. Yeah. I just like cackled so much at that. And just the fact that Ishu calls Aisling and Deirdre white feminists and, you know, mentioned like white women tears. I was like, wow, Ishu. Like, it's like, you are way too mature for this high school.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the most unrealistic part is that Ishu was considered not cool. Because I feel like kids who are like that, like, who are
no,
dry,
I don't think like, so. I think it's very realistic that she was considered uncool, because it's high school. It's a Catholic high school.
I guess.
And if you go against the grain, and if you don't, you know, attempt to soften yourself to be likable, then people are not going to hang out with you.
Maybe
later on, when you're adults, you can say, oh, I was a cool kid. But really, you have to go through that phase in high school where no one wants to hang out with you because you're just not interested in Riverdale and don't use Instagram. But yeah, I thought it was really sweet. Like Ishu showing Hani, like, hey, this is how a healthy relationship is, where, you know, someone accepts your dietary restrictions, respects your religion. She like comes up with a list of halal restaurants that they can go to. And there's a scene where Aisling was just like, it's fine. Like, Hani could just eat the vegetarian option at this
Captain like, America, the American restaurant.
Yeah, and then, like, there was also another scene where Hani says, whenever Aisling and Deirdre comes over to her house, her mom has to cook white people food. And not even, like, the non-spicy version of like, Bangladeshi dishes. It's, like, straight-up white people food, because Aisling and Deirdre are, like,
the worst.
They just don't want to eat it. Yeah.
The worst people in the world.
That's a sign. If a friend is not willing to eat your people's food, you need to dump them right away.
Not even like doesn't want to eat, actively talks shit about it. Like, it makes you wonder why Aisling is friends with Hani in the first place, when she obviously hates everything that isn't white Irish.
I think, okay, it's like a mix of things. It's like, they grew up together, so they're just holding on to this bond, right? And then it's also, well, Hani is kind of a pushover, So Aisling, as someone who is the queen bee and wants to be the center of attention, it's very easy to manipulate a friend into doing things that you want to do. And we see so many examples of that. Like, there'll be moments where there was a scene where Honey wants to go canvassing for her dad's campaign. And she had promised her dad, and Aisling and Deirdre, you know, they agree to help her. But once they show up, they're like, yeah, we don't want to do that. Like, you know, our boyfriends are here. Like, why don't you like come with us? And they persuade her to ditch the canvassing. And I'm like, that's not good friendship behavior, because you made a promise to someone and you're breaking it. And you're also, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's like they're treating her not as a friend, but like as a pet, right? They're like, she's the token person of color friend that they have to like prove that they're not racist, right? Even though they treat her very, very racistly.
Yeah. And like them not understanding why she can't do sleepovers, and Honey being like, my mom would be okay with the sleepovers, but I personally want to go back home so that I can do morning prayer. And her hiding this part to her friends, like, you know, Issue immediately says, that's not okay. Why are your friends like being so shitty and not letting you pray and not letting you, you know, eat your own food? Like, why are they not being considerate to you?
Yeah.
And that relationship between Honey and Issue is, you know, it's not romantic. It's more friendship based. It's more like, learn to respect yourself, learn to identify the red flags. And I thought that part of their relationship was like, it was like really, I was really invested in that part of the relationship versus their romantic relationship.
I mean, that's kind of romantic too, right? Having someone,
I mean, that's
like,
true.
It's
definitely like a gradual friends to lovers situation. And I'm like, yeah, I thought it was believable. I thought the pacing was great.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about the central relationship of the story, which is between Issue and Honey and their... Would you call it slow burn? It's not exactly slow, because they catch feelings real fast.
Yeah, they catch feelings within like the first quarter of the book.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of pining.
Yeah.
Miscommunication. And I love pining. That's like half of romance books. But I was very frustrated with the pining, because it was like one of those situations where I was just like, dump your friends. Go with the person who actually respects you.
Yeah, or like have one honest conversation for once in your entire relationship with each other.
Yeah. Oh my God, the most frustrating part was when Issue accidentally shares the fake dating guide Google Doc with her sister, and Honey sees that it was shared with with Issue's sister, and they just don't talk about it. They just kind of, you know, they're just like, why did you, like, in their heads they're like, why did this person share it? Why is it being weird? And it could literally be solved with just like a single conversation, and it does get solved with a single conversation, but it's like many chapters later, so it's like very, very frustrating.
I was actually surprised that it was solved in a civil conversation and not like a big blow up.
I mean, like, Honey is very non-confrontational, so I believe that.
Yeah.
We had to save the explosive fight for Honey and Aisling, like the ultimate showdown. So I kind of knew that it was going to be like a civil conversation between Issue and Honey with the Google Doc. And I just love the fact that Nick was like, yeah, you accidentally shared it with me. And, you know, I figured it was an accident, so I just like didn't read it. I was just like, wow, most realistic, like, way when it comes to Google Docs and sharing.
Yeah, and I thought it was funny that Nick was like very like, yeah, I saw it, but whatever. But Issue was like, oh my God, she's going to use this and blackmail me. That's like where her brain goes to. Just showing like her mindset is still in the
sibling rivalry mode.
Like,
yeah.
like everything I do is ammunition for her to get back at me with our parents. And it's like,
well, it's also issues not out with her parents. So it's like genuine fear too.
Yeah. But then, you know, Nick is like, I think Nick is more like us, which is like a little bit older, a little bit like, you know what? This, it's all bullshit anyways. You really shouldn't care about any of this.
I have to say, like, as an older reader reading this YA book, we talked early on about like the parental relationships and like Nick's whole journey. And, you know, it just goes to show that we're older readers. I'm really curious as to like what teenage readers feel reading this book.
Yeah. Are they a honey or are they an issue?
It's like, is the whole toxic friendship thing like while they're reading it, they're like, oh, I'm going through that right now. Whereas as us, we're just like, we can recognize the red flags right away.
Maybe. I mean, it's hard to admit you're in a toxic relationship when you're in that toxic relationship, right? You know, hopefully this book is helpful for people stuck in those relationships to kind of reevaluate where they are.
Yeah. what did you think about Aisling and Issue's cheating scandal and how Principal Gallagher dealt with it?
Yeah, it was frustrating to read, but not altogether unbelievable. I can totally believe that the principal of this Catholic girls' school would side with the white girl who was popular, who can put on the innocent act at the drop of a dime, right? Whereas her treating Issue with suspicion and treating her as if she was guilty before any investigation was also very believable.
And her springing an ambush with her parents, I was like, what the hell is this psychotic situation?
Yeah. I kind of wish that the final conflict was this conflict that results in like outside attention and media investigating this racist happenings in this high school. That might have been a little too much, but I really wanted the principal to get her reckoning as well. And I feel like the school kind of got off a little easy on all that.
Yeah, just how Issue is in that situation where her parents are ambushed. She's ambushed with her parents.
Yeah.
And her parents immediately siding with the principal, believing that Issue is the one who cheated, because, you know, like, why would you be called into the principal's office if you were innocent, right? And I was like, man, that is so relatable, because I've had situations where like I've gotten into quote unquote academic like trouble or whatever, and the parents would like immediately side. My parents would immediately side with the school, and I'm just like, this school is bullshit. Like, how do you not?
Yeah.
Like, how do you not see like the racial microaggressions that are happening? And Nick, God bless Nick for flying over and solving it within like one meeting.
Yeah, like Nick does the thing that I'm assuming Ashley's parents did, which is come in and defend her sister instead of like deferring to authority.
Yeah, and what was really wild to me was Issue is valedictorian of her class. Like, she has like topped her like all of her exams, and it's like, wouldn't you just immediately assume that the girl who has lower grades would cheat off of the valedictorian of the school? But it's like the entire school was just waiting for Issue to slip up. They just wanted a reason to finally like have a valid reason to hate her.
I mean, there is that story beat where Nick, as the Issue of her day, didn't get head girl of her class. And, you know, you get the feeling that something similar happened, where the school found a way to either disqualify her or convince her not to run for head girl or prefect.
Yeah. I mean, Nick was just like, this school is bullshit. Oh my God, it just gets worse.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, like as an older person, you like immediately see the game. And no, it's hard because when you're a high schooler, like you don't have any power. You just have to like deal with the cards that are given to you.
Yeah.
And it was just so frustrating when, you know, it was proven that Aisling cheated and they said, oh, she's going to be punished with detention, I guess. Also, let's keep this under wrap because we don't tolerate bullying in the school. And I'm like, excuse me?
Well, because Aisling has a bright future ahead of her as a white girl. We don't want to ruin that, you know?
But they were so eager to just pin it on Ishita. And I was just like, this is bullshit. This is bullshit. And like the fact that the principal, like during the speeches for the head girl candidates, like there are kids coughing and saying like cheater, liar, right as Ishita is about to do her speech. And Principal Gallagher is just staring off into the distance. And it's like, you call yourself an educator? You call yourself, like you say that you don't tolerate bullying in your school when this is happening right in front of your face. And it was so frustrating.
I mean, it was frustrating, but at the same time, it was pretty clear that she didn't see Issue as one of her students.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I like the way that Adiba wrote Principal Gallagher, and like you see, like in Issue's POV, you're like, I saw a hint of glee in her eyes. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, wow, like it reminded me a lot of like Kathy Park Hong's book Minor Feelings, where where it's just like, are we like we're seeing this, right? We're like this isn't just me thinking that this is racist. And I don't know, it was just like a very very clear way to show, I guess, like the perspective of a person of color.
Yeah.
Seeing how a white person's, an ignorant white person's brain churns. It's like, we can see it happening in real time.
I mean, as a minority anywhere, our lives are microaggressions and gaslighting, right? And being gaslighted.
Yeah, and Hani has been gaslighted her entire life by her friends.
Yeah. Before we wrap, I did want to bring it back to the romance between Issue and Hani. And I want to get your thoughts about the sheer number of rain scenes in this book.
I mean, it's Ireland, so I believe it. You know, it rains all the time. And I thought it was really funny how Issue says, why is it always raining? Why do I always get drenched when I'm meeting Hani or when we have like a moment? And I was like, that's really funny.
Yeah, I feel like there's scenes written just in case this book gets adapted into television. So we have plenty of romantic rain scenes between the two of them.
But we kind of skipped over a very big part of the book, which is Hani coming out as bisexual to her friends.
Right.
And how they treat her about it. And I was like, man, bi erasure is so real.
It was pretty amazing the sheer speed in which it was dismissed. Aisling and Deirdre didn't even consider it for like more than a few seconds before saying, no, that's not true. You're not like that. Which is at the same time,
and they say that it's
brand.
A phase, yeah. Too. They're just like, oh, we already know that you're going to end up with a guy anyway. And when she is dating Issue, they say, oh, you're lesbians, right? And it's like, that's not the correct term. And, you know, sexuality is fluid. And I don't, like, it's what, like year 2021 in this book?
Yeah. Like, I mean,
this is the age of Snapchatting and Instagramming. And you're telling me that these kids, like, don't understand bisexuality. Obviously, it's very realistic because bi erasure is very real. Bi phobia is very, very real. Even in the queer community, there is a lot of downplaying of bisexuals, saying that, you know, they're quote unquote cheating because, you know, they get to like switch one or the other. I have a friend who is bisexual, and she's actually been on this podcast before, Caitlin Kelly. She was in our Kiss Quotient episode, and she's talked about how like people have treated her that way growing up when she came out as bisexual, and people being like, oh, well, you're dating a guy, so you can't be bisexual. You can't like girls. And before she even dated a girl, it was just like, how do you know you're bisexual? And it's like, well, I think they know their own sexuality. I think they already know who they're attracted to. Like, it's freaking bullshit with the Riverdale stuff, too. It's just like, oh, man. Like, which guy do you find attractive? And Honey being like, I'm not into guys lately. And you know what? Like, that's valid. I don't know why her friends were being such dicks about it.
Well, because they're dicks. I mean, I think that's the one takeaway that everyone can agree with from this book is Ashley and Deirdre, bad friends who Honey should have cut loose a long time ago, or at least, you know, a few months ago. When they started becoming toxic.
How fucked up was that party scene where they're just waiting for Honey and Ishu to show up so that they can play this drinking game and purposely make Honey feel really bad? And them being like, why can't you drink? Is that like, I didn't know that you were that type of Muslim. And it's like, what do you mean by that type of Muslim?
I mean, it's toxic gaslighting behavior that is entirely in character for Aisling. And, you know, Deirdre is just, she's just a follower, right?
I actually thought that there would be hope for Deirdre in the very beginning because she's the one who says like, oh, like, you know, Ishita's cool. Like, it's fine. And she's like very much a peacekeeper. So I thought, you know, Deirdre would come around, but you find out very early on that like as soon as Honey is kind of bumped out of like the best friend pedestal, she's very eager to take that spot. So like I said, I got a lot of war flashbacks, and you know, me as an old person just shaking my head. I'm like, oh, these kids, they're gonna grow up to be such horrible adults. They like, someone needs to stop them in this white feminist pipeline. Like, how did this happen?
I mean, the sad part is Ashley's going to be just fine. She's going to find plenty of people who are just like her and probably be very successful in life because of her privilege.
And knowing how to wield it to
her
advantage. Yeah, yeah. I don't think I've cursed and gasped and just, like, been so reactive while reading, because there were a lot of moments where I was just like, fuck this shit. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, especially in a YA romance, I don't think there's ever been this. I don't think we've read this toxic of an antagonist ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Never seen. I don't think we've seen this like hateable an antagonist in a YA romance for like, at least since I've started reading these types of books.
I've never seen a young person be so manipulative and like so calculating with with her plans of ruining someone's life so thoroughly as like Ashley.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like after the cheating scandal is, you know, revealed that Ashley was the one who cheated and they're trying to keep it under wraps, Ashley is like, I'm going to ruin Ishu's life. I'm going to humiliate her even more than she humiliated me.
Well,
and you find out later on that she had this plan from the very beginning. And it's just like, how many steps were you ahead in this maniacal plan to get I'm just like, wow, that is like behavior that I don't like really see in books, but definitely see in real life, because man, some kids are very
and she still thinks she's the victim too, which is, you know, also very believable. And, you know, we see this type of manipulation in like politics a lot, and
it's really sad because you're seeing it in young people and you're just like, wow, is there a way to stop this? Like, could we have stopped this from happening? And I just hate the fact that I can just picture Aisling as as an adult. And it's like, oh, she's going to be one of those people.
Yeah.
And that's kind of sad. And I feel like that's an experience that a lot of people of color go through. Like, people you thought were in your corner and understood you somehow end up on the other side.
Yeah. Or putting up with toxic behavior because of some sort of loyalty, right? Like,
yeah, I've had to, like, ever since 2016, like, a lot of people in my outer social circles, I saw their true colors. I was like, oh, I thought, like, because we went to a liberal arts school in Manhattan, and because you were friends with so many people of color and queer people, that clearly you would think about how these politics would affect our lives and how some of the things that you're saying and are parroting are just really harmful and rooted in prejudice. But of course, like,
yeah,
it's like it's unfortunately an experience that a lot of people of color go through. So yeah,
I feel like we've spent a good majority of this podcast complaining about Aisling, which, you know, is admittedly also a big part of the book. But I do want to reiterate that the romance part of this romance was also very sweet and fluffy. It will make you feel good about yourself and with love. It's just Adiba did such a great job crafting this most villainous of teen girls, teen white girls.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I wish, like, even though fake dating is in the title and they do have like a fake dating guide on their Google Doc, I feel like they were just friends, like, for the majority of the book with, like, pining. And, you know, a lot of it wasn't fake. A lot of it was, you know.
Yeah, it's always fun to read the perspective of, like, the grumpy character who is so angry that they're catching feelings.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny, too, where, like, Issue was like, shit, I have a crush on her. It's like, I need to end it right away. And I was just like, wow, relatable again. But yeah, that's like, that's the fun part of fake dating stories, right? Like, the moment where they find out that feelings are involved and then the awkwardness ensues. And man, things do get awkward between Hani and Issue.
Yeah. And, you know, all of their interactions were very cute. You know, the awkwardness made it cuter, I think.
Yeah. I wish we saw, like, more of, like, the staging of the relationships, you know? Like, I just kind of wish there were, like, more scenes. And, like, I guess, like, more Instagramming, you know? Like, I wanted them to, like, really hone in on, like, the cheesiness. Being like, okay, we have to be, like, the bisexual couple of our school. We're going to do all the gay things so that people will give us the vote.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's the thing with, there are just so many storylines, right? Like, you know, you have, you know, Hani and Issue fake dating, Issue and Nick's sibling reconciliation, Issue and her parents, Tiger immigrant parents story, Hani and her parents, teen lying to her parents story. And then Aisling and Deidre, toxic friend story, like, all of that combined together into one, admittedly not that long of a book, neither. It's like a pretty good, like, what, 300 some pages?
It's like 300 pages, yeah. But that's like my favorite type of romances, though, where it's wrapped in a lot of like human drama. It's like the romance is like the icing in the cake,
yeah.
Which, you know, which is weird because it's like, you're reading romance for the romance, but I read romance for the romance and the side.
That's true. But I mean, it all makes sense too, because all of the above are all obstacles to that romance, right? They all form the individual emotional / generational traumas that form Hani and Issue's personalities.
Oh my God. I just remembered, like, speaking of, like, Instagram earlier, like, I'm just remembering, like, Aisling being like, hey, so I saw Issue in your Instagram post in your, like, Bengali party. And it's, like, Issue's, like, at the very corner of that Instagram post, I'm just like, how long were you staring at that photo for you to like see issue? But there's a scene where Aisling and Dee are just, you know, they're saying, why didn't you invite us to any of your Bengali parties? I don't understand. Like, I thought we were your friends. And Hani being like, how do I tell them that they're not invited to the Bengali parties because they're not Bengali and it's a community thing and they're not part of this community?
I think that's part of it. Part of it is also like, I know you're going to have a terrible time there, so why would I invite you?
You don't even eat our food. Like, why would I invite you to literally what is called a feast?
Yeah, because I'm sure if they were better friends and like they had eaten her mother's food, there would be no or less of a conflict inviting them to the Bengali parties, right?
It's because like I had like a couple of Indian friends like growing up and I loved going over to their houses because their mom would cook like the best Indian food.
Yeah. The food descriptions were pretty good in this book.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure there are like people out there who are just like, what, like my white kids can't read this book because there are so many words that they don't understand. And like,
well, those people suck. So who cares about them?
Blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, listen, I'm Asian and I don't even know like half the things in this book. Okay. Like I had to Google some of the food because I had no idea what they were.
Yeah. But they all sounded good. And I love the fact that, you know, you have so many different moms and aunties, each with their own specialties, right? Like Hani's mom is known for making this dish and Isha's mom is known for making this dish. It was just really cool to see the diversity even in the food that's portrayed.
You know, I love how they repeatedly said in the book, oh, if you don't eat the food in a Bengali household, it's considered very rude. Like, we will not send you out of the house without something to eat. And it just reminded me of the Swedish debate that we had like on Twitter where it's like the Swedes don't feed you if you come over. Like, how is that possible? And I'm like, yeah, like never in a freaking Asian household will you ever be turned away without food. It's just part of our love language. Yeah. So yeah,
definitely. All right. I guess on that note, any last thoughts on Hani and Isu's Guide to Fake Dating?
Hani and Isu's Guide to Fake Dating, it won the YA Book Prize, which is a prize for the UK and Ireland's best young adult fiction. And yeah, it was like coincidental that we picked this book for this month and it won the award.
Yeah, like once again, we can take credit for that, right? We can totally.
No, I can take credit for that because I have excellent taste.
I mean, like you mentioned, I'm sure there are some white parents who are offended that their children would read a book with brown people on the cover about brown people and their food. But this shows that like there's plenty of people who appreciate this type of story. And it's such a, like, I don't know if the UK and Ireland have the same types of book debates that we have here in the States, because things are getting pretty dire here in terms of like book bans and people not wanting to read anything written by or about people of color. But it is at least comforting to know that the major award givers do appreciate these types of stories.
Yeah. And, you know, we mentioned it early on in the podcast, but I really like the fact that this book was set in Ireland. I love the fact that the author is Irish herself. And, you know, like in our book club, in our like introduction thread, we have a lot of people who are from outside America and they do say, hey, it's actually really hard for us to find authors of color on our bookshelves that are like not American or Canadian. We don't have as much diversity or have as many numbers. And it's just nice that you have an Irish, you have a book about brown Irish girls, and you know, it's winning awards and it's actually on bookshelves.
Yeah.
Like Irish and UK readers don't have to read American books to, you know, feel seen, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, congrats to Adipa Jagadar on the award. It's definitely well deserved. This was a really fun read with a lot of really important themes and portrayals. And I think, you know, like media holds a mirror to the real world. And I'm sure, like you mentioned, there's someone reading about Aisling and realizing maybe I have an Aisling in my life too that I need to
run.
To take care of.
run. Burn those bridges early on, because there are some people who are just not worth their time. But anyway, thank you for listening to our discussion of Hani and Ishu's Guide to Fake Dating. So for the month of September, we are reading You're Invited by Amanda Jayatissa. We've had Amanda on the show before. We talked to her about her book, My Sweet Girl, which was a thriller that I really liked. You're Invited is also a thriller, and it's about a woman who is invited to go to Sri Lanka for a wedding. She's going there to stop it because it's her ex-boyfriend and former best friend's wedding. And when the former best friend goes missing and is presumed dead, the woman is accused of murder. So it has been described to me as Crazy Rich Asians meets Gone Girl. So I am very excited to read this book.
Yeah, that's a pretty potent combination there.
Like, listen, I love crime and I love weddings. So this combines two things that I really like. So
yeah,
I'm excited.
All right. Looking forward to reading and discussing that with you at the end of the month. As always, if you've read our books and want to discuss with us, let us know your thoughts on our Goodreads forums. We always love to include feedback from our listeners in our discussions whenever possible. Also, a reminder that you can find all the books covered on our podcast on our Books and Boba online bookshop, where all of your purchases not only help support our podcast, but also your local bookstores as well. You can find the link to our bookshop by going to booksandboba.com and clicking on the bookshop link. That'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba and our discussion of Hani and Ishu's Guide to Fake Dating. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Ri Ryu and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Shinyi Pai, host of the podcast The Blue Suit. In a world full of stuff, what do we choose to hold on to? The Blue Suit is a podcast about commonplace objects and the people who transform them into something remarkable. From an inherited Chinese English dictionary to an old caliphone playing records left behind by Japanese Americans incarcerated during World War II, our podcast showcases modern-day artifacts of Asian America and what gets elevated to heirloom status. Find it by searching for The Blue Suit wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Brian, did you go to Saturday school as a kid?
I sure did. Did you?
Totally.
Well, at our podcast, Saturday School, we don't teach a language, but we pass along the culture that we do know.
And that's Asian American pop culture.
Ada's a journalist, and I'm a professor and film festival programmer.
We've watched a lot of great Asian American movies, and we want you to watch them too. Come listen to us as we look back at the pioneering films that have led us to today.